He is Robin Leach from Far Away. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys. Hi, Robin from Far Away. What are you doing?
Well, at about this time every year, which is August in this case, I'm in my vacation place in the South Coast area of Massachusetts along the Atlantic Ocean, observing cars, vehicles that are used by people over here, and have a couple other things which I will contribute to this week's show.
All right.
It's an amazing how many large families seem to be over here vacationing in the same area I am. And what are they driving? Suburbans, Expeditions, Tahoes, and the like, with other assorted smaller but still large-ish SUV design vehicles in many cases. And they are loaded with bike racks on the tops. Now, to try to get a bicycle up on a rack of an Expedition or a Suburban is a mighty feat for only for those who have the strength of the body to be able to lift the bikes up an extra 18 inches over the probable height of a, let's say, a Subaru Outback or that kind of vehicle.
I know, I couldn't do it.
One, two, or three bikes on top of racks that are on top of the cars. Many of the cars or the vehicles or the trucks, I should say.
Robin, can I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
How many times have you traveled with a bunch of kids in the back of your car?
Well, I don't have any kids to travel in the back of my car.
Well, if you did,
that's his point.
That was my point. But keep going.
I don't know what
you could put the kids on the rack.
My point is,
the other alternative is, of course, they hang these bike carriers off the back in trailer hitches on the backs of these vehicles, and you can sometimes be going down the highway and seeing
the bike flying off.
Two to four bikes shaking and dangling off the back sides of these vehicles, which always make me wonder what happens if they ever fall off. And I guess they probably don't because of the attachments. But
can I tell you,
shaky,
just way, way back in the day, a fairly good-sized family that I knew used to do when they went first to Cooperstown and then to Martha's Vineyard? They took two cars because between the kids and the dogs and the bikes and the everythings. And by the way, not two petite cars, not two smart cars ever, because the only way to do that was with, again, big vehicles. If your point is that it is hard to conceive of, from a practical standpoint, when there are, when we're in a phase where people have growing, expanding families and they're trying to go to the beach or go for an expedition, that you need something bigger than a sedan, then I point well taken.
Well, that's exactly what's happening, of course. And one giant Suburban will take the place of two smaller vehicles filled to the gills with the large family any day, and that's what's so popular about them.
My brother used to refer to his Suburban as my living room.
Who did?
My brother. And he would put his two kids and the three dogs. Yeah. And
In any event, that's what's over here. There are sort of Jeeps. There are the usual assortment of Mercedes, Audi, and BMW sedans, generally probably driven by the grandparents of some of the larger families who don't need the space and the utility of these aforementioned vehicles that are running around the streets here. But that's what's going on in vacation areas, I presume, other places in Massachusetts and anywhere in the country as well. And this is where you find them. I don't think we see plenty of them over in our broadcast area, simply because, of course, we've got the prep schools and we see the families.
And Jay was at Lebanon.
Lebanon Speedway.
Speedway, and he saw numerous. He also, this was in last week's report, but he was real clear that he didn't see any scooters or anything.
Any scooters. Well, speaking of scooters, there are some Vespa scooters running around here. I noticed a few over the weekend, and I either saw them in garages or they were on the street with people running around, and they are very efficient pieces of transportation.
Scooters are great. I was in Washington, D.C. last week. I went down for a quick express
visit
slash road trip. And more about the road trip in a little bit. But scooters and rental scooters are all over the city, and people are just scooting around.
Are they doing better than in Chicago? Because, by the way, there's a legitimate – I'm not being my usual facetious self here, but there is a legitimate I don't even know how to say this diplomatically – foolishness. People are absolutely getting killed and –
It's insane.
It's ridiculous. I mean, they just drive the scooters right down the middle of a road with a bunch of cars with no helmet.
In the middle of the city, I saw tourists in D.C. where couples. I saw older people. Couples. It was cute, but people with holding their better half in front of them on the scooter tooling down the streets.
Tooling being an interesting word.
I think they are very interesting urban alternatives.
Yeah, if there's nothing else on the street.
But I believe there was a news blip in the last few days about sort of purported gang use of these scooters and causing havoc and resulting in the company who owned these scooters to have been landed with some kind of citation or demand to
cease and desist,
increase the security of these vehicles, of the ability to have these vehicles used by people to try to keep them out of hands of people who are misusing them.
I mean, it is an interesting way to get about, though.
Yes, it is.
There's everything to be said for it. Yeah. There's just it wants
but
to be a little more attention.
But you can't forget the safety aspects, as we're talking about here, when you're using these vehicles.
Well,
and you don't just have the right to go down the. I don't know whether maybe you do have the right to go down the middle of the travel lane for cars. And
I honestly am not sure.
You have bike lanes are popping up in urban streets and even in some rural areas along these two-lane highways, and they seem to be customized, 3 foot wide strips with X's in them. Obviously noting them as being bike lanes, and I don't think they're scooter bike lanes. I think they're manually pedaled bicycle lanes.
Well, we're going to run out of space to put lanes in if we have to put lanes for,
scooters,
and scooters, bicycles.
But I know it isn't safety tips time, but there's got to be some – just as there's got to be some sort of etiquette. There's got to be because the
– Of course. It's going to take time, though. We're going to go
it's
through.
It's going to take time, and it's going to take a learning curve.
And I'm not just talking
figure
about
figure out how to either control or otherwise put out so many suggestive ways of properly operating these vehicles that you don't have the deaths rising because of misuse of these vehicles by people who don't really know how the proper way to use them is. And unless we need to go on, I'd like to go to a different topic, and then Jay is going to finish out the show.
All right.
And I'm reading an article right here, When to Stop Repairing Your Car and Buy New. Actually, it's a quite interesting article, and it's one we haven't really covered that I know of in our shows over the years as far as getting specific, and I won't be too specific here. But one of the things that were pointed out to me in this article were if you had a 15-year-old Subaru or any car years old, the tires on them were much smaller than the tires on the same type vehicle today. And in this particular article, they noted a 14-inch tire would cost for a full set of tire rack $217.80 plus mounting, balance, and disposal. And today you go up to the 17-inch tires, and you're going to spend a minimum of $456 to replace those same tires when they come up. And we have talked about larger tires and smaller tires, or at least I have, and Jay has in a different factor, over time. There's no question that the larger the tires and the bigger the cars are, the larger some of the parts are and the more expensive they're going to be. And then you get down to the point of how much are you going to increase, if any, the value of your older car by retaining it and putting on smaller tires all the time if it is still running reasonably maintenance-free beyond those kinds of things. But you also have a lot of wear and tear of front ball joints steering mechanisms and brakes and all that kind of thing. And I had the same situation I faced when I had my, I think it was a 2006 Isuzu, no, it was a 16 Isuzu Ascender built by GM, and I was faced with a $5,000-plus repair order of things, which were including rust,
that's why I dumped mine.
All that. And I went out and bought a close to a 30,000 Jeep Cherokee instead of replacing it. The body and the interior of that car was like new. And do I regret having not put in $7,000 to have maybe a a repaired vehicle that could still be running on the road today? I don't know the answer to that.
I do.
Certainly something that used
no,
car
you don't.
People...
No, you don't. We know the answer.
You know, if you don't know the answer, that's really bizarre, because the answer is no, you didn't want to do that. You wanted to get the Jeep, and you love your Jeep. And
well,
I can speak as someone who's emotionally attached to my car, because until, you know, the thing rusts to death, which it practically has, I'm going to keep driving it because I like it. But I was so unhappy with my Isuzu Ascender, or whatever it ended up being called, by GM, Trooper, whatever, that I couldn't get rid of it fast enough. It's, you know, people do have an attachment to their cars, and I have
I don't think this particular article was talking about emotional attachment to the cars.
No, I don't think it was.
So what was the article?
Don't have easy money to go out and afford a new replacement alternative.
Then you fix your car.
Your older car running. The question is, is there a point at which you stop trying to maintain that older car?
Yes, when the guy...
Go out and buy a used second-hand car or something. Because as Jay has mentioned many times, as have I, the newer, older cars are so much better built.
Right.
Older cars that they last longer, and they're better rust protected and all that kind of thing.
And I'm interrupting only to say that if the author of that particular article had interviewed another totally different dear old friend of mine who grew up at a time where you kept your car until you couldn't drive it anymore. And one day, her mechanic said, you know what? You got to get a new car because I can't fix this anymore.
Well,
and voila, she did. So it seems pretty – I don't know. This doesn't seem like a – it seems like a pretty clear-cut decision based on the individual case. That's all.
Yes, and there are a lot of angles to this article, so which are relevant and not relevant in terms of our discussion aspects of it. But it does make, we know there are a lot of older cars running around the area, and people have to make the choice at some point of obviously keeping those older cars running and paying $3,000 every few months on things that start breaking down, or going out and maybe buying a second-hand, newer, used car.
Well, it's all about choices, right?
Maybe with an extended warranty on them or not. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, it's all about choices. I mean, sometimes money dictates whether you're going to buy a new car or not.
Right, and that's why it's just a little difficult to, you know, as you said, cover all the angles in the article.
Right.
What else have you discovered out there, or are we going to hear about DC?
I think those are the two things I thought would be bring up for this show, and Jay, I think, probably has some things he was going to talk about before I chimed in.
Yeah, a couple
so we'll
things.
Turn it over to him.
I want to go back to my DC road trip. People who know me know I just love driving and love going on road trips, and going up and down the Northeast Corridor is maybe not the most how should I say, interesting. Well, it is interesting and very interesting drive, but you don't see a lot of countryside and national parks and the like.
Where were you born?
I was born in Belgium.
The reason I'm saying this is because I just got a note from a woman in Holland who is, and she was taking a train ride, and she said, I bring a good book because I know the route by heart and there's nothing interesting to see. And I thought, wow, because I always, you know, the way that I keep myself engaged and entertained is just the opposite. I'm always looking at just in case something, you just never know when you're going
when
to
you
see
when you go up and down 95, whether you go down to D.C. or you go all the way down to Florida, I mean, there are always things happening on the road. but it was a fun drive. What always surprises me is how little time it actually takes to get there. I was taking a nephew there for a quick visit, And we were gone 2 days, and it took 6 hours from my house to the yeah. west side of D.C. Near Georgetown, and
it's only a pain if you're commuting. Like I, right. Somebody yeah. down in Virginia Beach used to come up here for the weekend, and it was always it was a long drive getting home. But if you're going for a couple of days, you hop in and.
And people who know the Baltimore, D.C. Area know that you also have now Easy Pass Express lanes. So you can choose to sit in traffic to cross Baltimore and D.C., or you can pay extra bucks and get into the two or three reserved lanes for people who actually are willing to pay a surcharge. And sometimes it's worth it. I mean, and
well, I will chime in and say yes. My last trip south, which ended me up in Florida, or actually ended me up in New Orleans, I actually made use of one of those special extra easy pass roadways that had been built, which was, when I took it, at the time I took it, basically bare of any other, of traffic, which yeah. made the trip through Washington, D.C. area very easy indeed. Because if you hit some of these areas, even with easy pass roads at the wrong times, say commuter times and all that, you can be just backed up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an occupational hazard. An occupational hazard beyond. Because right. I know people who do travel down there regularly, and they've got all their little special systems for. You don't want to end up at XYZ at XYZ time, because otherwise your trip's going to be another three
course.
And a half hours.
And of course, our fair state of Connecticut is going through the whole hassle of whether or not to put in toll roads. one of the arguments against it has been. That it taxes unfairly the people who use them as commuter roads every day. But let me tell you, you go down and live in the southeastern side of the state of Connecticut, where you've got 95 and the Merritt Parkway and the like, and you drive the wrong way on any of those roads on any given a commuter day, and you are clogged either getting to work or leaving work. And the other side is moving relatively smoothly.
That toll road issue, though, is a complicated issue. I mean,
it's a very complicated issue. I don't think we want to get political.
If you look at Southern Connecticut and 95, or 84 even, let's say you put a toll on I-84, for instance. Forget about 95 for two seconds. What keeps, half the traffic driving on I-84 in the morning goes down on 684 in New York State after that. So if Connecticut starts putting tolls on 84, what's going to keep New York from putting tolls on 684? And now I'm going to be paying tolls on 684 going to and from New York, which I don't pay now. The repercussions of trying to put tolls on one road, not another, I think it's just hopefully it's light years away, but we'll see.
To be continued. So meanwhile, having chimed in, what else did you want to say about D.C.?
Interestingly, going down a one-way street with traffic, with 99%
good.
Of the traffic. I was in the middle lane, and the side lanes were empty. There was no traffic because there was a merge about 500 feet ahead, and nobody got into the left or right lane to try to squeeze a bunch of cars. You'd be in New York and everybody would be jumping in every open space. And I thought, boy, they're awfully civil around here. And I don't know if that was just an isolated case or not, but I thought, driving habits are different from one city to another.
And I just think really it's important. Driving habits, scooter habits, biking habits. I want to go back to that for 1 second. By bike, sure. I'm talking about pedal. And I alluded to this last week, and it's your safety tip time. But we really have to I'm not talking about sharing there. I'm talking about people who were biking, and they have their right, and they were three abreast. And it was a hill that Robin knows very well where the bump is. And, I almost got the person coming very quickly the other way, fortunately had a driveway to pull into because no one had any place else to go. There just wasn't room.
Well, It's interesting. Over here where I am, we've got two-lane roads, rural roads, and a lot of them are used every morning by walkers and bikers. And there is not much room for passing going either direction on these roads. There's also another interesting thing, which I will maybe start out the safety thing in with bicycles, and not that we're a bicycle show, but we had a tragic death over here a few days ago of a bicyclist who apparently struck a pothole while biking, and I'm not quite sure how he didn't see it. But in any event, the pothole was of such a size, and this is on the side of a traveled two-lane road. There are no bike lanes. It's just the way it was. The front tire, as the story seems to go, went into the pothole, basically abruptly stopped the bicyclist's forward motion, and as the story goes, the bicyclist went over the handlebars and landed on his head, broke his neck, and while that may not have been the cause that killed him, because I've since heard that there may have been a heart condition issue, 3 days later he did not survive the situation. But the pothole is a very interesting situation with bicycle wheels, because some of them are very deep, and there's one another one that I'm bicycling over here a lot. I brought my bicycle, and there's a pothole in a shaded area of a road, which I have noted since this story came out, would do the same kind of thing to anybody who did not see it while bicycling along to their destination.
Robin, do you wear your helmet when you're riding your bicycle?
It's a requirement in Massachusetts.
Of course, everything is mandatory in Massachusetts.
And this man was wearing a helmet. The problem is it didn't solve the neck breakage problem because it did not. The impact was of such a state that the neck got broken.
All right. So we got 2 minutes, and Jay is going to take us out.
Yeah, I just wanted for car fans. Just want to mention upcoming events. Both at Lime Rock on Labor Day weekend. That's, a little less than 2 weeks away now, with a extended weekend of vintage car racing, but also a car show on Sunday, I believe. And then I will be going with my simulator to a car show in Farmington at the Farmington...
which is getting a lot of...
Polo grounds. Yep. This weekend, this Dream Ride event that's going on this weekend.
Is that 23-24?
That is correct. Yep,
okay.
And it's getting it's huge, is what I've been told. I've never been to it. I did not know about it. I was introduced and approached by the organizers at Lime Rock actually a few months ago. And I look forward to going there, and they are expecting, I think, close to 1,000 cars that will be on the grounds there on Sunday. They have different categories of show cars, American muscle cars, American classics, which are the really old cars. They also have an Italian sports car category, a German sports car category. So it should be a really great event, and I look forward to it. It is on the weekend of...
It's the 23rd and 24th of August.
Yep.
And when you come back, you'll tell us about it, and then we'll go right into the historic festival at Lime Rock, which is a big, it's a really big and beautiful and wonderful event.
Yep.
He is Robin Leach, remotely. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Geeks.